This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If we get really good at particular type of blocks, that's what we're going to feature. So we're not going to try to do something that doesn't make sense.
Awesome.
Reasonable sports thoughts.
Reasonable sports thoughts. From
narrowing the aperture.
Wait, wasn't that the open for our show?
I think so.
It was,
at one point.
Yeah.
I think at one point it was with the reasonable sports thoughts. But that's, yeah, it's coming from the coach of the Bears. And I think we're learning a little bit about what makes Ben Johnson tick. And I really suggest that you read the big biographical Brad Biggs piece, the one that has the Ben Johnson Cobra Kai
yearbook photo.
Yearbook photo. And apparently something that Ben Johnson would do just for, I don't want to call it fun, but something he was compelled to do. He had a notebook, just a regular spiral notebook.
Me too.
And a pencil. And he would just write numbers in sequence in columns.
That I do not do.
But that is in the mom. His mom brought it out and showed it to Biggs. They took a picture. But I think Brian Casella took the photo, so you know they're great. And he has these. It's a little weird that somebody would just want to write. One, two, three.
Yeah, what's the purpose of that?
Maybe to just calm his mind?
See, that sounds like an anxiety, trick.
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
coming from a long line of engineers.
Sound like his version of doodling?
It sounds like somebody, either that or somebody who wants to write code, which he probably ended up doing having been a computer science major.
Or he's just a robot.
Computer science and math.
Yeah, the things in my family that I don't do that would probably make me a lot more money. So I admire it. I just also admire the well-roundedness of it all. You know, like to have a logical mind and thought process like that, and then to be able to apply it to football.
So
we started to see the change in baseball about 20 years ago. I hear it's going to catch on eventually.
Yeah, I heard people think it ruined the game. Let's hear.
No, that was your not posting videos of two teams with the biggest fan bases in Japan, MLB. The hell are you guys doing?
I want to see if you hear what I hear as Johnson talks about how the offensive line is going to come together.
It shouldn't be easy. This should be hard. You know, the spring should be hard. Training camp should be hard. Anything worth doing is hard. So it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of effort. In particular, year one, we should not be comfortable as we're coming into the springtime. We're going to load these guys up. We're going to see what they can handle. We're going to fail And that's okay. That's part of how you learn and how you grow and you get better. And so we're going to encourage that as a coaching staff. So nothing about this is about making it easier. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
So pair that with the quotes that we've seen, whether it's in appropriately our guest at noon, Kevin Fishbane, and Adam Johns's article talking about how people called Ben Johnson a red ass. Mm-hmm. I think we can say that on the air.
Yes.
And a stickler for detail and being competitive. And when you combine all of those things, did he just tell us his philosophy?
I think he's a solver. I think his nature is to solve. The computer stuff, the math stuff, the way he talks about how he goes about his business, I think, and I've always thought this a little bit about Tom Thibodeau, and it's a compliment, where Thibodeau has trouble sort of, where he's always had trouble kind of drawing the line, where having a life and having basketball and but I always saw Thibodeau.
His life is ball.
And I always saw. If you watch him coach, the way his hand, the right hand, is always sort of moving as if he's got a joystick. Like he's trying to move the pieces where they're supposed to be. His is not mathematical. His is geometric. He knows who's supposed to be where.
Yep.
That's why he's always bellowing, because he can't control them. But I think that he is a geometry solver, where this is more mathematical arithmetic, but you know, there's geometry in there too. But I just get this sense in Ben Johnson that he wants to get it right. That one of the reasons when he said, do we want the perfect play? Do we want to try to slow it down, get the perfect play? He knows what it is. Can he get it communicated? Have they practiced it? Can he get it right? Can he get it right? I think that, and I'd love to talk to him about it. But my belief is, just hearing the way he talks about football and what's important to him and how he describes other people, he's trying to finish the proof. He's trying to you know, QED. The problem is solved. What is it? Quad erat dictum. I've made my point. I've proven it, and then circle it.
That was a very Duke word you used.
Yeah, I mean, it's result and proof and show your work. That's always what I learned it to be. Poor Marshall, man. He's going to have to cool up this show again, because you and I are not going to have a pitch to Ben Johnson that's successful. Hello. We appreciate your center narrowing the aperture, and we really like your numbers book. I, too, have a notebook. Would you like to talk to us narrowing about problem solving?
Yes, quad erat demonstrandum. What was to be shown?
I was like, I'm not familiar with the terminology.
You never seen that in like a math, or you put that on there as like an FU, I solved it?
I mean, just the three dots, therefore. That's always been my trick.
Yeah, but QED. I showed you what was to be shown.
It's a lot of big words and a lot more small words, okay?
Well, it's three letters. It's QED.
I said show your work.
That I can understand that.
Yeah, same concept.
I always hated that when you had to show your work. It just sucked. Like, it was like I know how to solve this problem, and I don't need to write it all out. I know the steps. Why do I need to write every single step down?
But they want to make sure you're not cutting corners. Because there's some ways.
But if I'm finding the way to get the right answer, then
yeah,
who cares?
That's because how I was with the Wonder Look. Like, I knew what I saw. I just didn't know how to say it.
But they're trying to exercise those muscles in your brain. I see it both ways. I know we've all been there. Where it's like, can I just do it my way?
It's not even about doing it my way. It's, I know the steps you want me to take. Why do I need to write them all down if I can do it in my head?
It was definitely annoying when my friend stole the answer sheet, and then, you know, I had all the answers, and I had to show some work.
Oh, yeah, just get your renowned photographer friend to give you a $20,000 camera, too, and you're good to go.
Yeah, just call.
Old Two Furnace Dan over here, which was solving a problem. I'm just really excited to see how this is figured when it comes to hearing players talk about how they're viewing the offense, for example, or how they're viewing building plays on a season. You know, like your first four games are not going to be the same as your last four. So what did you do to add to your, not just the repertoire, but like add to your base plays? Like, how are you seeing this being put together in a way that makes sense? And frankly, just how are you utilizing all parts of the field? That didn't happen enough last season, as we know. And I feel like if you're viewing the game like this, and all of those things should be happening there. But additionally, how is this affecting how they're acquiring personnel? You know, we haven't heard a lot from these guys, whether it's Jonah Jackson, Joe Tooney, or Drew Dahlman. And I really liked what Dio Odingbo had to say yesterday as well. I think that that might have gotten lost in all the offensive discussion. But what kind of player does he want? And you're starting to figure that out. So how does that affect everybody else who's already on the team?
I also noted, too, I mean, those we don't know. I wish I answered those questions. But I do think that Ben Johnson, he did mention something about looking at players and do you have the prototype at every position? And it's one thing for him to say, hey, I'll just show me what I got and I'll coach him up and we'll go. But as we're talking about his influence on some of these acquisitions, it's clear he does know what he wants at every spot on the offense. I don't know that applies to the defense, but he certainly has in his mind an idea. And this is why it raises these other questions about, does Braxton Jones look enough like his vision of a left tackle?
I think it comes down to that.
Because does Cole Kmet look like his vision of a tight end?
I do think with Braxton Jones, and the times that we've heard him speak, I like what he has to say. You know, you certainly see why he's gotten the opportunities he has. Unfortunately, on the field, things are what they have been. But I really have appreciated hearing him talk the last couple of years. You know, I think that that's great. But yeah, I do wonder about this. And also, again, it's just other things. Like, we're not talking about Drew Dahlman's relative athletic score because we've gotten to see it on the field. You know, arm length has been brought up so many times. Do you know who's in the upper percentile? Not to steal Jim Irsay's upper quartile, the upper quartile here, but you know who's in like an outlier percentage for arm length? Braxton Jones. So, okay, how do you measure that against a guy like Will Campbell, who everybody's worried about his arm size suddenly, when you hear all about the leverage with which he plays the base, him calling protections, that knowledge? Like, what is more valuable to you? And I think we're finding that out when we hear Ben Johnson talk. We know what was more valuable to Ryan Poles previously, and it was those physical traits, right? So how are you guys going to figure that out in a way that creates some progress here?
We're going to learn. We're going to find all that out. We're going to see it. They're going to talk about it. I'm also really encouraged because this group, and I think Johnson, in the same way we love listening to Billy Donovan talk, and we're going to hear from him later in the show, by the way, he had some really good stuff about player development, that this group of reporters, I'm excited to have the interplay between this particular group of reporters and Ben Johnson, because I think they're going to do the Bears beat so good. You know, whether it's Grody and Emma and Wiederer and I can name every Leisure and Johns and Hogue and Courtney Cronin.
Don't forget Potsy.
And Potsy. I mean, everybody involved. Biggs.
Alex Shapiro had a good question about Michael Penix to Drew Dahlman yesterday.
Herb Howard is outstanding. And if I'm leaving anybody off, I really apologize. It's like an award speech. I'm sorry.
Caitlin Sharkey, Dion.
Thank you.
Cassie Carlson.
Thank you. That you have the good questions are going to get good answers.
Yeah.
Good follow-ups are going to get good answers. I don't think Ben Johnson's afraid of answering a question. And I just think there's so much going on in his head that some of it's bound to come out. I think we're going to get smarter about football this year.
I don't even question that part. I absolutely believe that. We're already seeing more of that rubbing off on Ryan Poles in his answers. Because he's more comfortable, I think, speaking right now as well. And I think he always has been, to an extent. There's no question about that. I've appreciated his transparency, too. It's not like we're insulting people as individuals here. You know, it's like, I just may not always agree with your thought process or your philosophy or the play you called. But it's all decisions. It's not necessarily
Eberflus was just the quality of the person. Dope.
The thing that frustrates me, though, is this. I joke that this isn't the National Talking League. You know, and it's okay if you're good at football, but you're not good with the media. What concerns you is when the media discussion might be reflective of how you communicate with your players. And when we've heard other people talk about the communication there, or former Colts, for example, who have podcasts like Zaire Franklin. If you haven't heard that, though, it's worth listening to when it comes to how coaches communicate with players.
It's a complicated game. Intellect matters, and to the extent that your ability to speak and describe what you're doing and why you're doing it, to the extent that that is a window into your ability to think it through, I think is really important. And that was always my worry with Eberflus. Like, was he some sort of idiot savant who couldn't really communicate anything to us and was convinced that his decisions that were clearly wrong were right? I mean, some of that stuff, when he was wrong about stuff and spectacularly wrong about stuff and insisting he wasn't, that's when I knew things were, that he had absolutely, you got to get rid of this guy.
When you go back and you listen to all the times he blamed the players, it really started to add up. The quotes where this was supposed to be like this. Famously, the one that blew my brain was, we were supposed to have had a fourth interception on Joe Flacco and the Browns at the time. And I'm like, how realistic is that, my guy?
Right. We're like, supposed to.
You threw it up to Darnell Mooney for a Hail Mary and he kicked the ball out of his hands. Like, let's not. How realistic are you right here with saying you were supposed to have a fourth interception in that game?
He kicked the ball out of his own hand.
You know, about a week ago, I had successfully forgotten about that.
I did too.
I'm here to remind you.
I did too.
It was sitting in his, like, on his stomach.
Yes.
Like, how do you not come down with that, dude?
And you know what? He didn't, to his credit, like, Darnell Mooney did not face most of the ire in that game. But the idea that even still that you're still saying, oh, well, that was supposed to be intercepted. Yeah, and I'm supposed to be 20 pounds lighter. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this isn't how it goes. You know, what about your decisions put your team in the position to where they had to force a fourth turnover to win this game?
I forgot that.
Like, what about that part?
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Didn't I tell you that was the Lawrence House of L podcast where at 4:30 in the morning here, but like 2:30 California time, I'm up like mad after Thanksgiving because I'm like, this guy, how many times were you going to say this? And then I just started doing one score games. I started looking up the post game quotes of one score games.
Go to sleep.
I'm here to tell you that if I don't go to sleep, there's hell to pay. And somebody's going to face it. That's exactly what happened.
We're going to send the wrong Sandman in. A couple things. One guy did say he's already named his fantasy baseball team Pastor of Muppets. So...
What a deep cut that is. Also, apparently we neglected Kevin Fishbane, our guest at noon in the...
Sorry, Fishy Business. That's my bad.
I did quote him earlier in this segment talking about the article with Adam Johns that I recommend you all read. It came out a few weeks ago.
Everybody's noting, whether we intended it or not, this whole 90 minutes of geekdom that we've done, in whether it's narrowing the aperture or quad... erat de demonstrandum.
Show your work.
It's Pi Day.
Ah, yes.
And saying whether
see how Earth responds to that.
Whether we intended it or not.
You're not having a good day either, buddy.
maybe this is just like something in the air on Pi Day that causes us to be nerds.
No, I'm just like this.
I am too.
That's why we need Marshall.
I was trying to blame it on somebody.
How many
else.
Digits of pi can you do?
3.14159.
That's all I got.
26.
3.14159 is all I can do.
That's all you need.
Am I right? 3.14159 26.
You were correct.
Okay.
I only know 3.14.
Anyway,
8675309.
This is so. I'm really sorry for the last hour and a half.
I'm not.
Of the show.
And Joe Ostrowski joins us next to set your wagertainment weekend on the score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He earned it, you know, certainly by the way he's performed in the minors. But, I don't think certainly we do have a good track record with those kind of hitters. I think that when you draft a guy like that, you don't know exactly the path. But certainly you're hoping that sort of what you expect in the draft is lived up to. I think he's even exceeded that. It's definitely quicker than we probably anticipated. But like I said, he's a really hard worker. He's got great makeup, and I think his hard work has gone into him earning that.
That's Jed Hoyer on Matt Shaw's trip to Japan. Now, we shouldn't confuse the fact that he is on the roster and on the trip with him being necessarily on the team, because the roster rules are relaxed.
It's a little similar to a doubleheader, not exactly, but that's kind of the concept here.
And we're starting to get some of the images back as the Cubs are now on the ground and participating in some of the opening ceremonies for their trip in Japan, one of which involved, I saw Taylor McGregor tweeted this, if you want to see the video.
Yeah, it's definitely, I'll put it on our Twitch chat too, so they can watch it.
It is a ceremony called the Breaking of the Sake Barrel. And it's sort of, you know, ritualized ceremony where you have these special mallets. Craig Council and Shota Imanaga are standing on a stage, and they use these mallets to break the top of the sake barrel. And that, I guess, is the beginning of the celebration or the special time. And they clap, and everybody in the room claps. And then if you look carefully, you see Shota pick up the mallet and do the Craig Council stance.
I really should have asked him about that whenever we had him on when he first became manager. I know it's been so long ago, but
about how he developed that?
The discussion of it never gets old to me.
Because
how did he generate a hit out of that?
I'll tell you why. And if you really want the answer to that, it's really interesting. And this was, I talked to Joe Madden about this, that when you're involved in youth baseball, you're always seeing kids impersonate their heroes and screw around with batting stances.
Yes.
We love batting stances. They're fun.
I, as an adult, also.
Yeah. Everybody's got to do Julio Franco. Everybody got to do Jerry Morales and Bobby Tolan and all that stuff. So it's fun. And when I was at a hitting lesson for some of the travel kids, I think they were 9, and it was, I forgot which instructor it was at Bash, but it was at Bash Academy and over on Rockwell. And he took, it was like a super cut of all of the hitters with these unique things.
Cool.
With open, closed, high hands, low hands, and all the silliness and the waving of the batter up here, down here. But then if you sync up all of those, from the moment the load position is required, mm-hmm. when the front foot lands and the hands are back, mm-hmm. they're identical. It's all window dressing.
It's just how you get there.
It's all window dressing, with some exceptions at the major league level. There's all kinds of timing
Vlad
mechanisms.
Guerrero.
Well, and a lot of it is monocular vision versus binocular vision.
Sure.
That some guys want to have two eyes, depending on if you have a dominant eye,
which most people do,
and a lot of that stuff matters with how you figure out how to hit. But when the time comes, anybody who can hit a baseball the right way, the foot's in the right place and yep. the hands are in the right place at the right time.
Well, I love that explanation. I still want to ask Craig Council about it, because that's yeah. just one of those that growing up at that time is definitely one that stood out, you know. And
oh yeah,
to be on the championship level teams that he's been on, it's definitely worth a discussion.
Yeah,
sure.
Especially he was a late bloomer as a player too, and to then keep grinding at it and not have a coach change it.
Right.
That I'm always curious of how did somebody not make you change that?
Like, how did you generate any semblance of power out of that? Like, but you're right, that's what happens. But for a lot of people, the non-big leaguers, you don't, you know, that's the thing. Like, that's where the mechanics come into play, is they all end up finding that spot, whereas you and I, we do not.
That's why I love watching them break down swings during PGA tournaments. And when they can stop everything, then you can really get that explanation. I wish they did more of this for baseball, where they'll use the tracker and they'll show, here's what the right elbow is doing and why. Here's why, even though Rory McIlroy is only 5'9", he can generate the power that he can in his swing because of how he uses the ground. Mm-hmm. And all of these principles, the idea of club head speed at that moment, mm-hmm, can be generated depending in an idealized way for your body.
All of that is very cool to me.
Yeah, I mean that's the secret stuff that the best analysts can explain to you why somebody's doing that stuff. So Jed Hoyer is looking over his team that he's put together, and they're probably not quite done doing it. They've got some decisions to make, but one thing he does like is depth.
We're deeper. I think there's no question. I think, like I said, I knew we were going to have to make some hard decisions, and we're going to probably keep having to make hard decisions as we go. But I feel like, you know, we have a lot of young talent in AAA. So I do think that, you know, when we have the inevitable injuries or inevitable poor performance, I do think that, like, we have some guys that aren't on this trip that are going to play a big role. And I think that's a big part of the messaging when you bring these guys in and they're disappointed they're not going, or disappointed they're not on the team or getting optioned. It's like, we all know, you know, there's players that got sent out early that are going to have a major impact on this team. We see it every single year. And so just continuing to do what they need to do to focus and not be disappointed, because every single year, I mean, I think the two obvious examples to me would be, like, you know, Contreras. We didn't think he was, you know, close to ready, you know, at the beginning of 2016, and he played a huge role in that team. And then, you know, look at Morel. You know, Morel, you know, by mid-May, I think it was at 22, he was up and never went back, really. So, I mean, I think, except for the beginning of 23. But, I mean, really, for the most part, you know, every year there's going to be players that have a huge impact that get sent out of camp, or even some guys that don't even go to Major League camp. So it's going to take a lot more than 31 guys to have a successful season.
I'm waiting to know what happens also with Kevin Alcantara, because of where he is as a prospect. And I got to watch him a little bit in spring training, and I heard the comps to Ellie De La Cruz, to O'Neill Cruz, these big, tall, rangy, athletic. He doesn't look quite as twitchy.
Ellie in person is a sight to behold.
Well, so is Alcantara. He's every bit of 6'5".
The thing that is interesting about Alcantara to me is just the relentlessness once he gets on base, right? And that therein lies a comp, right? Those two that you mentioned, but the hustle, you know, for lack of a better term, like he shows it. There's a hustle meeting production at the right level with him that I thought was really appreciated during spring training.
He doesn't move with the same kind
glide.
Of grace. Yeah, he doesn't glide
the pad level,
as,
if you will,
as much as De La Cruz does. But the frame certainly suggests that there's power in there, and, you know, a lot of fielding length for sure.
I will say that, like, the efficiency of movement for Ellie De La Cruz at that height is always kind of what gets me. You know, it's like we talk about Luis Robert and how he's able to just glide across a field the way he does. But I feel like with Ellie, it's just the incredible speed and, like, the balance and everything moving together in a way that's elite level.
But what you have going against you in baseball is the tall position players don't age well,
as we've seen.
And we don't, there's no real solid explanation why, but generally big guys and tall guys, the aging curve is steeper when you talk about your, you know, the Richie Sexsons.
I mean, even pitchers
like
too. You know, we've talked about a lot of notably tall pitchers with the Cubs, and I feel like that's still a discussion as well. But Either way, maybe that changes too, you know, once medicine gets better, which we've seen. Mm-hmm. I also want to point this out. How nice was it to hear Jed Hoyer talk like that? When you have the good problems to have, when he says we have to make some tough decisions here, and people who in previous years you thought you absolutely needed on the roster because the flash was important at the right time. Like, this is.
Gee, it sounds like the Bears.
More so based on consistency, and you're talking about depth and.
The Bears general manager talking about his offensive line before last year.
Well, he also
hard to make this
he
roster.
Said it was going to be hard to make the roster, and then he kept Velus Jones. So, uh-huh. And then people got mad at me for that.
This team would have been a lot deeper though if they had Cody Bellinger. Let me just say that.
I said the same thing, and you know, Robbie, Dan, and I have a dollar bet. Is it his F war that we?
I'm aware of this bet
between Bellinger and Bush. Yeah, yes. He doesn't like my bet on this.
I don't
because Yankee Stadium is tiny for Cody Bellinger. He will hit the ball out of that park.
And they already have injuries. He's going to get a lot of time. But Cody Bellinger's exit velocities have been.
Yes, you've been saying this for a couple of years now. And the last time you said it, I was still pointing out his weighted runs created plus was still very significant.
And that short porch and right for him?
That's what I'm saying.
Rizzo wanted to stay there.
Is Rizzo still available? Like, that's the funny part. You know, we were talking about free agents. Think about the amount of MLB free agents that are still available right now.
They're waiting them out. There's no reason to go rush and sign guys now. You got to, you know, make the significant others kick them out.
But let's we've been celebrating Bears doing the right things. I think we need to also take that time to appreciate Jed Hoyer talking like a guy who's running a team that is trying to actually contend. That's how you sound when you have real talent on your roster.
I don't think there's any question.
But it's awesome. We haven't been in this position for a while.
Yeah, so last year, Bellinger played 130 games, and he was a 2-2 F-war. And he is projected by most of the projection metrics to be the lowest projection is 1.7. The highest projection is 3.0.
I just hate that the Cubs had to be like, all right, we got Kyle Tucker, so we have to get rid of some money. Instead of just being like, all right, we got Kyle Tucker, and we can keep Cody Bellinger and try and make it work.
Yeah,
the,
right.
The only question I would have would be keeping people happy with time and at-bats, because if Saya is going to be your DH.
Well, why can't you move Michael Bush to third or to a different position? I understand it's tricky because he's good at first, but like you have flexibility there.
I asked all these questions as well. I like that you're repeating them.
It's also a lot of faith in PCA, which I think he's earned that faith.
It's his time.
But they are basically, with that move, they symbolize, all right, PCA, you're the guy.
Yes.
Which is good.
But I'm saying PCA, I think people still don't realize that he is supposed to be a star. He's not just a guy. This isn't a scrappy little who was this kid, where did he come from, getting a second chance. This was a prime prospect, a huge draft selection.
But I think when people express concern about him, it's that there has been a lot of time that's been given already. However, what you saw out of him in the second half last season is what people are banking on for that improvement. I don't count the Cactus League because of how the ball will leave
spring
the
training.
Bat.
It doesn't count.
Yeah, I can't. When you want to evaluate a guy like Kevin Alcantara, then I think it's worth a look, and you have to temper your expectation what you're seeing in spring training. But you can make the argument for Bellinger still being on the team when we have. I just think when it comes to him being in New York, that is going to play well to his strengths.
PCA in the second half, if that's a full season, that's an MVP candidate. That full stop. And for all the analysis that was done of his second half, the comp was peak Lorenzo Cain.
Peak Lorenzo Cain was important on a
World Series champion.
Couple World Series
yes.
teams, yeah.
Yes.
Well, actually, a few World Series teams, let's be honest.
Yeah, I would just think that this idea of, oh, you know, PCA could be you got to make room for him. As a fielder, the moment he steps out there, he's accruing war just because he's so good defensively. I mean, that guy can have, you know, a walk and a couple of strikeouts, whatever. He's the wait his WAR number because of his defense and a positive base running. Like, there are ways that he just being in the lineup is already a positive for you because of the stuff that isn't going to slump.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody is hating on what he brings. It's just a matter of the collective offensive talent of this team that is needed to win games.
Yeah, I would love for them to spend more money, but I'm also not going to make myself overrate Cody Bellinger as far as their pursuit of a World Series.
I mean, you're overrating him based on what you've rated him.
No, I'm saying I'm not going
to. You've felt this way for years now. And I would argue that he was more valuable even in the times where you thought that he wasn't to begin with in this discussion. And I'm talking about like September of 2023, for example.
I just think the version of him that came back from the wilderness, you had great Cody Bellinger. You had MVP Cody Bellinger. And then he broke because of multiple injuries, various whatever his kinetic issues were. And he changed his swing profile to make more contact, be more dangerous in two strike counts. He gave up some of the power, and now he picks his spots to go hunting for power. I just think this version of the player, and his defense is not what it was. I think this version of the player is, he has value as a Major League Baseball player, but I am not going to be tantalized by the Cody Bellinger of old.
Yeah, I know you've said all that. But the relative offensive talent that Cody Bellinger and the value that his bat, even now, after you saying all of that, would bring to the Cubs would result in more wins and losses, mostly wins, therefore, for the Cubs. Like, that would help them more offensively than, say, his bat on the Yankees. You know, like, then the Yankees wanted his bat.
Well, he's starting right now.
No, that's my point. Yeah. The Yankees wanted his bat. But I'm saying, like, for the lack of offense on the Cubs, even now, I would still add him to help secure a couple W's.
If he'd be willing to accept a lesser role.
But this isn't even a real discussion because he's not there. But right. I'm telling you why the Cubs specifically needed his offensive bat.
Well, I'm not sure if Michael Busch takes another step forward. Again, another top prospect. If in fact, and I hate to say they're due for some overachievement, but when Jed said that last year, it came out of frustration that they got a lot of people under their projections or on the lower ranges of their projections, but they're not counting on it now. They're not counting on some overachievers now because you have one of the best hitters in all of baseball on your team. And I think Joe Sheehan ranked him, what, 10th? 10th best player in baseball? Kyle Tucker?
Well, that doesn't surprise anybody.
But it seems to surprise some people still.
Who?
Cub fans that I talk to, this Tucker guy. What do you mean this?
What Cub fan doesn't know about Kyle Tucker?
Too many.
How?
Too many don't realize how good he is.
Well, they're about to find out.
I think so, too.
But, the same can be said for what I think Cody Bellinger is going to do offensively on the Yankees.
So. I think it's just because Kyle Tucker's in, like, a big figure. It's not like he's on big advertisements or anything. But once they watch him, they will grow to love him.
The Astros got to 7 straight ALCSs for a reason.
But he was never, like, the guy, I would say, there. Oh, I think it was Jose Odube and, like, some other point.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about, like, face of team, sure. But when it came to reason for offense and wins...
No, I agree with you.
Next up, we're going to bring it back to football with a guy who's very high on what the Bears are doing, particularly on the offensive line, Doug Farrar, national NFL writer for Athlon Sports, SB Nation, and The Guardian. He is a journalist and author and will join us next with some Bears positivity on The Score.
You know, obviously I'm concerned, but I just don't know to what degree it is and probably won't know. They're just trying to keep swelling down, I think, right now. Normal treatment for an ankle sprain and then whatever they decide to do back there. I hadn't really had time to visit with the medical yet on it, but I knew it was his ankle. They told me that on the bench. Yes.
Billy Donovan on the injured Josh Giddey. So, unfortunately, this great run from Giddey where he was putting up what... frankly, Robbie Triano called LeBron James numbers.
My God.
And he has been. What is it, 22, 12, 9, a block, and a steal?
Last 10 games, 22.5 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists.
I mean, that's pretty crazy. If you average that for a season, you're all NBA.
Luka Light.
That's a fact.
Oh, my word.
That's what he's been doing.
the takes out of Robbie Triano on it's, Josh Giddey's run.
This is not a bit. I don't know why people don't like his game. I understand on defense there's something different, but like on offense, how can you not like? When I watch him, I'm like, this guy's good.
Because it's inconsistent.
He also got better. Taking that floater out of his game got the most annoying aspect of his game under control. I hated that floater. I hate it. I know why he learned it, but if you're 6'8", this was, again, if you the most recent episode, the latest episode of the Organizations Win Championships podcast, we talked a lot about this, about your question, did the Bulls win the Caruso trade? And Jason went hard. He just said, yes, absolutely they won. He said, Giddey's a better player than Caruso. He's just better. He said, there's a reason why this guy was the number six pick. And what he does, you can't teach.
Offensively, it's not even close, like who is better. And then you have a younger player with control. I understand his contract's up, but you have control with a restricted free agency.
Okay. I'll be the one to be a wet blanket here. The reason why I think a lot of people think that's not the case is because Caruso was one of the few two-way players the Bulls had. He did have an offensive game. He also was crucial into that team's success at the time, knowing that the Bulls could have gotten first-round picks, depending on who you ask, multiple or perhaps one.
That's a different debate. Did they make the right trade?
But that's the point, is knowing what they could have gotten for Caruso.
Whether they made the right trade is a different question. Whether they got enough for him is the question. But I also think, too, to make the argument about, well, Caruso, and I absolutely believe Caruso could play an important role and a very high-profile role on a championship team. So could a lot of the guys on this Bulls team. Almost their entire roster, with a couple exceptions, could be contributing players on a good team. That's not the problem. They don't lack for those guys. They're a whole team of those guys.
Yeah, it's positional redundancy that is a concern.
It's no stars.
It's a lack of two-way players.
It's a lack of stars.
It's a lack of stars. Yeah, it's when you put it all together. Also, I think the piece of it with Caruso is we can't fairly judge a deal not knowing what was offered for him at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we know with Andre Drummond, that's been widely reported, and we know what ended up happening there.
But if Giddey can get rid of that shot, I'm telling you, if he can get rid of that if you're 6'8", don't shoot that shot. That's for a 6'2 guy. The floater is designed for, you can get past that first layer, and then you got to get, you're 6'8". And I know he's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he's not a bad finisher. He does go high off the glass like Kobe White does. Kobe White's really good at using the high glass. I love that. But and I know he's not going to try to dunk everything. He's not Javante Green. But he doesn't need to move backwards or anything other than toward the basket as a 6'8 finisher.
And I think that that's fair. They also have different spacing now because of Collins. Like that makes a difference to me. I still don't think there's enough movement in their half-court sets.
How so?
There's like something underneath the basket baseline. Like a lot of times it's standing
like flex,
standing around stationary passes and stuff, like, or, you know, some sort of like backdoor cut or something.
They did it a couple times in the last game, but it was a big like banana cut, what they call a blind pig action. It's what they used to call it. I don't know what they call it now, but like in the Thibodeau offense, the base was always that flex cut.
Yeah.
Like they dribble the guy out of the corner spot. He comes across. Ball reverses as the baseline screen is set up. That's like old Phil Johnson stuff. And people still use it. But I think it has to do with personnel. There isn't a lot of motion in what they do.
No.
It can be okay if you got the right matchups.
Yeah, the passes are quick. Although off ball, sometimes I'm just looking at people trying to figure out what the plan is, you know? This is nitpicky, but I just figured I would bring it up to you because it's you.
Yeah, let me watch a little closer tonight and see, because if it depends how they're using post-ups too, and whether or not they, because Giddey is not bad as a post passer.
There's two pieces of it to me. It's that Billy Donovan's offenses are always known for when they're successful making the extra pass, but then they also want to shoot so early in the clock. So it's a balancing act.
So how are you watching the game tonight? Are you watching the game with the idea that you still want them to lose? Are you watching the game just enjoying it what it is now? Because I don't think they're going to get out of the 10th seed. I think they are going to be in the play-in, no matter what.
Individual development. I guess I'm not going to be outcome biased as much. If now we're kind of locked into that, there's no reason to be outcome biased and just see our younger players getting better. Is Modest getting better? Is Trey Jones going to matter? Oh, by the way, do you see Cooper Flagg's in a wheelchair?
It's not good.
I hope it's not the Paul Pierce.
No, it
definitely
is not.
Definitely not, because he actually was holding
saw
his
the
ankle
injury.
And we saw him hobble to the bench.
We saw the injury. And yeah, that is Cooper Flagg being wheeled to and from. Oh boy. Well, that's a change. Now get on those brackets and see one round less, perhaps, for the old Blue Devils.
Well, it's Duke. Never mind. The selection committee doesn't even matter. You know what? You know everybody's going there. I know I'm going to watch the Bulls game, and I know they're playing the Nets, but I'm still going to watch because that's what we do.
Are you going to root for them?
I like it when the Bulls win.
Bulls win! Bulls win! Oh, everybody eat some rim! In Brooklyn! Oh, they're home, right? It's going to be a Brooklyn reference.
They have a... Yeah, they're home. They have a road trip coming up, and I'm trying to figure out why it is such a road trip. Did you know that? The slew of West Coast games, and it's like a fairly long road trip.
Oh, like the old circus trip?
But it's not. That's the thing. Oh. So then what is it? I was trying to figure that out the other day, actually.
The Magic Kingdom will never be the same.
I'm sure not. Next up, John Greenberg of The Athletic has all kinds of witty and entertaining sports thoughts for us on The Score.
Go, go for it. Go for it. Ooh, go for it. Go for it.
I like the way Dan Weederer put it this morning when he was out with Mully and Haw.
Weedy.
His name is Dan Weederer. He's been very conservative when it comes to these efforts in a way that's keeping us from getting irrationally exuberant. Even though I've tried to be as irrationally exuberant as possible over some of this stuff.
No, I like what the Bears have done, and I want to enjoy liking it.
But he says they've given themselves a chance to have a chance. I believe that's exactly how he put it.
Is it like when you enter a contest for a chance to win a prize?
Right, but
you don't even win a chance to win the prize.
I think it's a little more than that. Maybe my level of confidence. And look, I let myself get excited about new and different and good. If I think it matters, and I think Ben Johnson has earned the benefit of the doubt with everything he's said and everything he's done. How he's conducted himself, everything that's been said about him, that I also don't usually look at NFL schedules. I don't care because we have no idea, based on injury, how good those teams are really going to be. We have no clue.
Yeah, okay, except for the fact that you know how many good starters there are and you know how many injuries there are on average, so you can't extrapolate based on that what you have left is still probably better than it was previously. So that's kind of where I like your use of data, but I think controlling for variable matters because I took stats and I hate my brain. So I tell you all of this knowing that even though, yes, injuries can change the situation, they can change it dramatically. You're still putting yourself in a better position to withstand those based on what we've seen them do.
Correct. I think that's fair. But I also think
when your backup guy is better than the last backup guy, what have you done?
Well, you've given yourself a better chance to retain quality into December.
You've improved overall.
Like I say, the bottom third of the roster matters. Middle third of the roster matters.
Are you kidding? We're still talking about Matt Pryor. And appropriately so, Matt Pryor. You did the things to get yourself in the conversation.
The Bears added 5 new starters in the trenches in the last couple of weeks. 5. which is a major change, a major upgrade. And we're going to talk a little bit later on in the show about wandering around the store now and finding extra things and snacks and really going around and saying, oh, do I need this? I don't know. Like if
we're going to go to Dan's expired meat bin is what we're going to do.
Not really, because I think some of this stuff...
Quarterback situation right now?
Yeah.
How is that not discounted Mariano's meat?
I would look at it like this. It is discounted, but it's not the perishable stuff. Like some of this, if you're looking at the heavily discounted
stuff. It's that
sesame
oil that you had in your fridge that says it expired like three months ago, or it really didn't.
If there's a spice container of sage.
Right.
And you'd be like, you know what? I'll need this.
It needs the smell test.
Yeah.
Problem is the smell test is the NFL season.
Yeah, but if you say, like, look, if this is $1, at some point, rather than spend $6, I'm going to need this at some point. I've got room for it. I'll forget that I have it, but I'll have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll remind myself that I have it. Oh, yeah. Didn't I buy that?
Maybe you should keep a spice roster.
I hate my spice cabinet. Don't get me started.
Do you just need a lazy Susan?
I have one. I hate my spice cabinet. I screwed it up. I know we built the house and I had a vision for how it was going to work 20 years. I'm constantly grumbling about the spice cabinet.
One of you has Excel skills listening. Fix Dan a spice roster.
No, it's too late.
You just need like April. Her inventory of what's in our cabinets and our fridge is crazy. It's in her head. She doesn't keep a list. She just knows it. It's seriously insane. I'll be like, hey, do we have whatever spice? She's like, oh, yeah, it's in the cabinet, second row, and it's on the right.
You know what I would call that?
You
April,
guys
you
don't have. Wait till you have
she
kids.
She also runs a restaurant. So
But wait till you have kids. And wait till you have kids who like to cook for themselves.
People,
and then they don't tell you that they used all the cinnamon.
Well, that's a communication issue. Those are two different things.
Right, but if say it's easy when it's just the two of you.
Hey, I want to tell you this while we're on this topic, everybody. This is all good fodder for our Friday Fung topic, which is Dad Olympics.
No, it's not. We're not calling it Dad Olympics.
Because, for example, April's skill on spice knowledge is kind of the same concept.
It's mundane life skills.
Mundane life skills. But you can also call the meatball machine if it's on your mind and tell the meatball machine because it's keeping track of not only your Bears thoughts this week, but also your mundane skills. So if you want to text the text line, cool, but the meatball machine is going to record it for you, and then we have a higher likelihood of playing it back on Friday.
MLS Mundane Life Skills is going to be Friday Fung on Friday. We're going to set a time for it, and we are going to do it.
And whoever talked about the pumping gas with an ascent, you are correct. Tell us on the meatball machine if you don't have time to call in on Friday.
Right. If you don't want to wait for it, we will play those as you previously recorded them.
It's like a handheld recorder on your phone on the Odyssey app, like a note to self, except it's to us, but we don't talk back.
And it's your friend.
Yeah.
It doesn't judge. It just nods and it gives you a hug
when
you're done speaking. I guess short answer, I think the Bears are giving themselves a chance to go for it. Is the way I would phrase it.
So the question was asked among all of us, Studs, Robbie, me, you, Marshall, if the Bears are in a go-for-it season. And I would say yes. I don't know what it is. If playoffs is it, I would say they're doing it, which I guess means Super Bowl. But like, I wouldn't call them a Super Bowl contender, but I would say they're going for it.
And I would say there's almost an economic imperative to do so on this stage of your quarterback's contract. If you can't do it now, you're something's wrong, because you've got the financial flexibility, and I think they've made the moves to take advantage of their financial flexibility. Every year in the NFL should be a go-for-it year if you have a quarterback. Every single year, you should chart a path to win the Super Bowl if you've got the guy.
Or if you have your guy.
That's what I mean. If Ben Johnson thinks, if he said, I want this job, if Drew Dahlman says, I'm going to take less money because I want to come here, that's not to win six games.
God, I hope not.
That's not to win six games. That's to win 10 games.
Don't even put that out there. Don't even put the six-game thing
six
out there.
Six games
don't even
would be
think
an improvement.
It. Don't even think it.
It would be an improvement.
Yeah, and the whole learn how to win and there's an incremental thing. No. You can go win.
Hold on, though. That learn how to win thing is key, because I'm telling you, one of my major thesis statements for this next season is based on the research of reading Jason Leisure's article, for example, with the sad Kyler Gordon quotes where they talk about being in the prime of their careers and not knowing what it's like to win. Ben Johnson coming in and really giving the team faith, and maybe not faith, but at least some hope. And then also getting veterans who we've heard know how to win. I do think that having that mindset and that balance is important. Like we said, you know, flatten your curves on your ups and downs, right? Shorten your slumps. And I do believe that having some of these people that they've brought in will help with that.
They better. I think the best way the Bears learn how to win is by getting rid of their dumb head coach.
Well, also, like, hi. Score.
I don't know. What's up yours?
Score in your first series, y'all. Like, that would help me. Don't go 3-and-out in your first series. That means everything was working in practice, at least to that point.
I think the smartest thing they can do, the highest likelihood of winning, is take away somebody who didn't understand what to do in a game and when.
But I do think that there are times where... If that's all you know, and you see the beginning of it happening again, how does a 10-game losing streak happen like that? And I think it's because of what we just discussed. I think sometimes when you see it coming, can you stop it from happening the second time around? Or is that all you're thinking about? It does affect how you're playing and what goes on next. It's a question. I'm not saying that it's necessarily that easy to predict the outcome, but I think it is a fair question. That one game beat them, you could argue, 9 more times.
And I think with every transaction that goes by, with everything that they've done, I get a little closer to saying, you better make the playoffs this year. You better. That's my expectation.
I felt that way last year.
You should make the playoffs at a minimum. Maybe win a playoff game for the first time in God knows how long.
Wait, when was the last time?
2010, right? Wasn't the last time they won a playoff game the year they lost in the NFC Championship game?
Robbie, yes. Were you alive?
In 2010, no, I was still. No, yes, I was alive. Yes.
All right, so Robbie was alive. That's a good sign.
I was 14. I was born in 1995, so 14, 15.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, you're adult.
Yeah, I'm 29. I look like, well, actually, my girlfriend the other day said I look like Danny Parkins, and it's honestly like kind of stuck with me for a bit. It grosses me out.
No, you're handsome. Wait, we've always, with the moment you started here, we called you handsome.
Yeah, but then
Parkins.
My girlfriend said it, and that's what's like that crosses the line.
It's right. Also your the Anderson. Way you move around and stuff.
It's the height. It's a little bit of the look. It's
like the
lankiness.
Way he looks when he walks by. Looks
right.
Just like Danny.
But we also said that you're significantly better looking than Parkins.
Well,
as most people are.
Well, I did updates on BBM, and Lisa Felding was like, oh, I thought Danny Parkins walked in, and then I did the update like, and the Bears, they got this player on WBBM.
I'm telling you. Yep. Okay. Fight Club.
Wait, Danny has a New York R. accent R. now? Anderson. Was that what you just threw in there?
No,
he
might.
Walking here.
Hey, what are you doing? Huh?
I need New York Danny Parkins to be a concept.
New York Parkins. let me workshop.
New York Danny Parkin.
I go to bed down. It's like a little bit of Francesa.
I put the Ziggy on him. Next thing you know, he's counting on air. 1, 2.
Yeah, it eventually with the
something about the Mets bullpen just comes up.
The tone of voice, it would have to, it would become pretty close
one,
to Francesa.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Nicely done. That's Mike Francesa hosting Sesame Street.
I'm happy to know we've created a monster.
So if, in fact, the Bears are going for it.
If they're going for it.
Decompose a little bit.
I think you meant decompress.
I'm decomposing.
I don't know. I you know, some days maybe decompose a little bit. Some days decompress.
Get rid of all of them.
Who is the composer who died and people got mad at me when I mentioned that he died and I said he's something, now he's beginning his career as a decomposer? People got so mad at me. Bernstein too soon.
This mundane life skills challenge has really put Dan in the most dad joke mode. How long have we been working together on a regular basis? 5 years now? It's we're almost to 5 years.
I think that's right.
Yeah, because it was 2020.
Uh-huh.
And we just celebrated the pandemic-versary. I don't know if celebrated is the word I would use. Not in any
recognized.
Way. Acknowledged.
Acknowledged, yes.
Decompose a little bit.
pointed out, and the amount of dad jokes that have been coming from you over the last 48 hours have been at an all-time high per capita.
I was doing it yesterday. Well, yesterday was more...
Yesterday, you distracted yourself from getting back from commercial because you were thinking about a dad joke.
But yesterday, it was also me making up Maggie songs. Every time the dog comes over, I do nothing but sing various songs, and I swap her name into, like the McGilla Gorilla theme, all that stuff.
Cut out the honey buns, Emma.
And then she gives me a look, and Maggie's just saying, stop singing. Shut up.
What was the...
What?
I'm glad you sing to Maggie. Let's acknowledge
Maggie.
I sing
to everybody. She just doesn't need to tell me to stop.
Everybody needs a friend who is an animal. Like, Maggie's your friend. She's your friend who's a dog.
Yeah.
But she's your friend.
Yeah. I think it's probably
You know the term rotting, though? Like, sitting on your couch and rotting and, like, looking at your phone and, like, scrolling around. Yeah. I think I'm going to use decomposing. Yeah, I'm decomposing
bed, rot,
today.
Couch,
yeah, I'm
going to
lay
rot.
In my bed and just decompose.
What happened to you? I don't know.
Decomposing.
Let's gauge our level of trust in Ryan Poles overseeing a go for it year.
Are you declaring the Bears are going for it?
It sure seems like it. Like I say, no matter how you want to say it, they're giving themselves a chance to have a chance.
They are going for it.
I think they kind of are. You don't spend this kind of money to have a ramp up season.
Hell yeah.
Not with a 32-year-old left guard and a 32-year-old three technique.
Get on board. Let's have some expectations, people.
I'm there. Let's keep talking about it next.
Dan Bernstein.
Eventually, they stop growing.
Marshall Harris.
I've stopped growing physically, but not mentally, I hope.
That's a lovely sentiment.
Yeah.
Of course, we're all trying.
I'm just here to grow with you guys. Grow.
The Bernstein and Harris Show.
At our place, we're really trying to grow the man.
Middays 10 till 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Shaw is going to Japan. That's probably the news. The big news.
Probably. I don't know. Something cool.
We're going to Japan. Great. That's it. So I'm Craig Council, and I approve this message.
So Marquee posted a photo of Justin Turner in a kimono, but they spelled it Komono, K-O-M-O-N-O, instead of Kimono with an I, which is appropriate and
Wait,
proper.
Wait, what's that town in Indiana?
Kokomo.
Oh, my bad.
It's not Kokomo. And then I thought Komodo Dragon.
Kokomo was a Beach Boys song.
Also.
It is. Aruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you. Bermuda, Bahama. Come on, pretty mama. See? Doesn't get much better than that. I've never seen that.
I love
movie.
That song.
One time I saw the Beach Boys live, and John Stamos was the drummer. That was sick.
He really wanted to be a part of the Beach Boys.
Sweet.
Like, I feel like that was a whole season of Full House plot.
Wait, John Stamos was the drummer for the... Okay.
Well, he had all that experience from Jesse and the Rippers, you know.
Isn't Fred Armisen the drummer for a band? The former the SNL guy, the comedian?
To the internet.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's in some band, and I forgot what it was. But the picture was great because you have this giant leprechaun wearing a kimono, and then you saw all the Shota stuff. But
the old 97s?
Why are we...
Trench Mouth?
Yeah. Yeah, he's played with all those... Fred Armisen's played with all those bands.
Okay.
Why aren't we seeing more of like the Cubs-Japan adventure?
This is a deeper discussion, I think. But it goes back to also, A, that's a very expensive place to travel to if you're trying to be media covering it. But B, Major League Baseball should be stepping in to help distribute the message. I've seen really wonderful posts on social media from Taylor McGregor on Instagram, for example, people who work with the Cubs showing the behind the scenes and what Major League Baseball does to welcome teams to Japan. And this is a bit of similar situation from what we saw with the Cubs traveling to London. There are these really cool ceremonies, very culturally in sync, I think, with what you would expect to see out of those two places. And they do try to celebrate the Cubs being there and the respective teams who are playing the Dodgers and the Cubs. So I think that's worth discussing. Yes? What's
so
going on?
This breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. Bob Nightingale of USA Today just tweeted, "The Chicago Cubs, looking for starting rotation depth, have now entered negotiations on a one-year MLB contract with veteran Lance Lynn."
Have him start Crosstown.
No likey. No thank you.
I need the White Sox.
The last thing they need is another guy. Realized. They don't need another guy throwing 90. He will get his absolute, I can't say that. His something lit in Wrigley Field.
I think it's on the Rangers hat.
Yes, exactly. He will get his Tejas torched. Yes, whatever is on the Rangers hat, that exactly is what's going to happen to him at Wrigley Field. No thank you. A flyball pitcher? I mean, the fact that Shota got through last year as well as he did was great. That is a bad fit.
Well, I think it just says more about who do they think isn't going to be available? Like, how do you put that starting rotation?
But you got this great defense behind you, all these gold glovers behind you, and you want a fly ball pitcher? Come on, man. No.
Well, Shota, Boyd, and then that's just a lot of meatballs.
No, that, yeah, right?
Perhaps it is simply a depth move.
Meatball machine.
It's a bad one, though.
But is there somebody not ready that we don't know?
I know Assad's, he's starting off the year hurt.
Yeah, Assad, okay. Yes, but... You're still looking at probably Imanaga, Steele, Tyone, Boyd. Like, what's going on with Colin Ray, for example?
What about Jordan Wicks, too? I don't know what he's doing.
And that's very interesting.
No, thank you. No. No, I don't, we don't need hard-hit fly balls in Wrigley Field. Unless they know something about the weather that I don't. If the wind's like today, they'll be fine, but...
That wasn't good.
But most of the long-term weather projections are saying that things are going to normalize this year as far as the wind patterns go.
Wow, 920, that is a savage text. Jamie Moyer wasn't available.
Whoa!
Okay, so I guess getting back to the point about Japan, this is a trip that is filled with incredible visuals. It is a great way to, again... promote Major League Baseball. When the Bulls went to Japan, we saw so many pictures of just Bulls went to Japan. When the Bulls went to France, yeah. We saw so many pictures of what they were doing. It was well reported. You got to see it on national and local social media, local TV. There was a lot of video. You got to see exactly what was going on. Why am I only seeing this stuff in a limited amount of places?
I don't know. If I were Marquee, I mean, like you say, it's not cheap. But wouldn't you invest a little money in sending an extra crew entirely? I know you're sending people to cover the team, but you got to lean in to the experience and maybe a little bit of the silly. Why don't you say, hey, Ryan Dempster, you're going to have a camera crew. Go be like Anthony Bourdain. Go taste things. Go walk around. Talk to people. And we'll edit it afterward. But just do a no reservations type show with Ryan Dempster. And have him try stuff. And have him walk into a yakitori place. And have him go for street food. And have him just experience it. That's the kind of stuff where you get all this texture.
Well, even on trips like this... I know we've got Alex Cohen talking about the flight, right? I'm curious to know how the flight was. Let's listen to that.
I mean, the flight was 12 hours of joy. I mean, and you could tell there's a palpable energy with the team and with the coaches and with their families that this is just a really unique experience, just being able to do this, break up the monotony of spring when you would normally be in Mesa, Arizona, and instead you're going to Tokyo, Japan, and playing, you know, two Nippon League baseball teams and then the Los Angeles Dodgers. So there was a palpable excitement on the plane. And then when you get to the hotel, they have an organist at the top of the hotel playing Go Cubs Go. And, you know, people are cheersing with sake. And it's just it's a really fun atmosphere. And everyone's really excited. Today, people just went around. They went to the fish market that's 20 minutes away. They went to Shibuya, which is a big street crossing. A lot of people went to like a coffee shop, which is 15 minutes away. They have a famous pour over coffee here. So I think the players just were able to experience the culture and experience that with their families. And, you know, tomorrow comes the first workout and then the baseball starts. So it's really been a fun yet chaotic 24-hour stretch. It's going to be even more fun in the next 24, 48, 72 hours.
Okay, so I would like to see all of these things. I would like to see the visuals from being in Japan. I just don't want MLB at a picture of Shohei Ohtani standing in front of a like nondescript wall in Japan saying he has returned. I don't want just a picture, guys. I want the video of this. Share the experience with people.
Have you ever seen the Tokyo Fish Market before?
No.
Like when you watch Wicked Tuna and they pull the boats in and they put the grades on, like the super highest grade stuff that they get there, whatever, it's like a $27 a pound. And, you know, he looks at the core and he looks at the tail cut and everything. Like that stuff is immediately frozen and like overnighted to Tokyo. And they bring it out, and the giant frozen dressed bluefin tuna, and the bidding is it's dark because it's absolutely all the restaurants are coming for stuff that they're getting for that day at the most expensive stuff, and it's crazy to watch.
The first video I found of the past 24 hours of Major League Baseball posting on Twitter of the Japan trip is a hallway at the airport of Shota Imanaga and Seiya Suzuki walking through. Sometimes these airports have crowds. When I was in Taiwan with the Rockets, when Jeremy Lin played, I can't describe to you the thousands of people who were there overnight at the airport to welcome him. They had his fat heads, you know, the mm-hmm. big head decals. They had signs. They had jerseys. They had everything. They had noisemakers. It was a wonderful sight. Even the posts that I've seen from Taylor's Instagram. I shouldn't have to go to Taylor's Instagram when Major League Baseball has an account to know what's going on with the Cubs in Japan. This is ridiculous.
The whole point of doing this is to share it. The whole point of doing this is to fan the flames, bang the drums, as my friend Connie Kowal always used to say. You know, make everybody aware. That's the point of it. Say, hey, how cool is this?
The Major League Baseball experience in and of itself is cool. The flights are cool. Being at batting practice is fun. You get wonderful conversations every day at a ballpark. Why can't you share this stuff properly?
The Cubs shared a video of Seiya Suzuki with a samurai sword hitting batting practice, and all of the balls are split in half.
That's hilarious.
It looks great, but he should have charged the mound.
Could you imagine that pitcher
with
would be like
samurai sword?
No. Yeah, but the pitcher also has Hunso steel.
Oh, he pulls it out
Yes. So he charges the mound, and not only does he have the katana, it was made by Hattori Hanzo himself, and there are only two left.
I think that's Kill Bill.
Oh. Yeah, that's a plot of Kill Bill. Yeah.
My whole point is I shouldn't have to just find this stuff in specific places. You know how to platform your Major League Baseball. Or wait, maybe you don't. And that's part of the problem.
See, I would argue they don't know how to platform.
That's my issue with all of this. Put it everywhere when it comes to content. Put it on every single platform, every single outlet. MySpace, Facebook. I don't even know what other antiquated forums there are. Everywhere. Share this with everybody you can because you don't know who's consuming what on where. But you should. It's just silly to me.
MySpace still exists. Oh, my God.
I just threw it out there to make
Tom
it
was my I top don't like friend. The way this looks at all. This is
Who's
so different.
Who's in the top eight?
What's the top eight?
Your top eight friends.
Yeah,
so, like,
Friendster,
when they go to your change
I
or your page.
I want to see this everywhere. Yeah. But, my goodness.
I would rank it daily, and I would rank all of my friends, and I'd let them know where they stood in my life.
Were they actual baseballs he was actually slicing through for real?
Yes.
And on what platform is that video? What social media outlet?
That would be on X, Twitter, whatever. And it was on the Cubs page.
Okay. I have a video.
1.7K reshares. So that's good.
All right. We're up to 3.2 million because the Cubs know how to post video of their baseball players being in Japan. If only Major League Baseball took the same cue.
You know, that they're not interested. That's up to Mike Trout to promote himself. It'll be up to the Cubs to promote themselves. Those couldn't have been real baseballs. There's no way that he was actually cutting them completely in half.
I mean, they kind of look like they're baseballs cut in half. Oh, no, you can see the core and everything. Get Meredith Wills on those.
That's a liability, though, to have Seiya do that.
Oh, you mean a legal exposure, you think?
Well, just like, what if he just like let go or like something happened? He just cuts himself a samurai sword.
He looks pretty confident with this thing.
Or do you remember, was it Tyler Colvin that got his lung punctured by the shard of a bat? Remember the bat broke off and helicoptered at him when he was leading off a third? And it impaled him? It could be really bad if a guy's swinging with a samurai sword. Whoops! And he Addison Russells that thing. Next thing you know, someone's head's off.
I might be buying for it. People are saying it's fake.
When Grady Jarrett,
it's got to be fake. I don't believe you. I don't believe that somebody can stand there. I don't care how sharp the samurai sword is. You are not slicing up. And you know how perfectly you'd have to get it? I'm not buying it.
But here's the thing. So we're talking about a potentially fake video on the Cubs Twitter as to what's going on in Japan because we're looking for information as to how their trip is going. Cool.
The Brewers have been doing a bunch of fake videos, too. Really well-done fake videos.
Like, the more I'm watching, I'm doing the deep dive. I'm going frame by frame. I think it's real.
No way. I will bet. I'll bet you a dollar it's not. I will bet you.
There's a lot of dollars being bet on this show, and I kind of like it.
What I wouldn't give to see the video from this trip being posted in less than 24 hours.
Next up, I'm going to ask the question once again that Robbie Triano asked us off the air regarding the Chicago Bulls, and then we're all going to publicly admit we're watching the Bulls game tonight. That's next.